This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
I just want to do things my own way, you know.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you worldwide in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe on this beautiful blue-green planet of ours we call our Earth. How you doing, fans? Phil here. From Trinidad World Recording Studios, Fort Worth, Texas, on a 60-degree day here in mid-January, still wearing a wool jacket, felt cowboy hat, scarf, boots, long underwear, not really. Music was meant for the colder climes, I always say. Where is that cold weather? Where is that cold weather? I'm tired of making fires in my fireplace at home, you know, and having to turn on the AC to get it cold enough. Like those old stories about Nixon in the White House, you know, always talk about. Was he a Pennsylvania guy? Nixon, I think. You know, he'd turn on the AC, like to 45 degrees, and build a fire in the president's office. Fix himself a stiff scotch. God, those were the days. Where are those guys, man? Well, we don't need Nixon, I guess, but someone like him, someone who drinks a little bourbon, a little scotch, sits by the fire, thinks about the world's problems, and comes to some good conclusions, hopefully. Phil here, how's everybody doing? Boy, how about old Pete Coatney, man, the last couple of weeks? Sitting in, Jack Ingram's longtime drummer, talking Christmas, talking music, talking Ingram, talking the world. He knows all about these things. So great to have him with us last couple of weeks. Well, guess what? In a further treat, Pete will be coming by again today, yet again, to look ahead at 2012. See what's going on. See what's on the plate for the Jack Ingram and the Beat Up Ford Band. Talk a little football, some predictions for 2012. So many bands touring, the end of the world imminent. See what Pete thinks about all this. Pete is a deeply spiritual man. He's kind of he's kind of like a Buddhist monk of Texas music out there. A fine Christian gentleman, a guy that younger musicians, misbehaving themselves, should we say. Maybe they seek out Pete. They seek out his advice, his counsel backstage. As he sits there and, you know, sips from a hot cup of coffee, looking like he's dressed to be in the Rolling Stones, getting ready to go on stage. I see these young guys, and I was one of them once, you know, and still am one of them, seeking his counsel. You know, can I wear this shirt with these pants? I'm married, so should I do this? All these kinds of things. So Pete's the guy to go to. He's just the godfather of the whole scene, the backline guy. You know, a counselor, a man of great repute, and we are all the better for having him drop by to share his views on the world. We are all the better for it. Well, well, well. Everyone knows I never go to the movies. You start having kids, running your own business. Good grief. When am I going to find time to drive to a mall, park, walk 2 football fields into a theater where some guy behind me kicks the back of my chair and eats popcorn. I'd rather sit in my own home where someone kicks the back of my chair and throws popcorn at me, where people are screaming and running around the house. Yes, why do I need to go pay for that experience? I can have it right there at home, where the floor is also at times sticky, where there is food on the furniture. It's those kids, you see. Oh, man. So I try to catch up a little bit. I'm always about a year behind. You know, I watch the Golden Globes. Here's what I do. Golden Globes comes on. I haven't seen any of the movies. But some of the presenters, I don't know if it is at the Golden Globes as much, but they, at the Oscars, you know, the last year's winner presents to this year. Then I think, oh, yeah, he won last year. I never saw that movie. Then I know it's on Netflix waiting for me. I go check it out. So that's kind of what I've been doing of late. I did see A Midnight in Paris. Great Woody Allen movie. One of his best of what he's made, 42 movies or something like that. He benefits from having the great Texas actor Owen Wilson in the lead role. Wilson is a, if you don't know the story, Midnight in Paris. I'm assuming a lot of you out there probably don't care for Woody Allen. He's just a New York weirdo, funny guy. But I'm telling you, man, check out Midnight in Paris. It's an accessible film. Owen Wilson, very charming. He's a writer, kind of a sellout writer, with his fiance in Paris, where he is whisked away to the 1920s of Paris, where he hangs with all the great writers of the age and ponders his importance in the modern era. Anyway, it says a lot about art, about writing, about how whatever era we live in is not the right era to live in. Everyone's telling me, man, Phil, you should have been around in like the 70s, man. You were born 20 years too late, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff, or too early, and or too late. So that the movie kind of centers around those themes, that even some of the great writers wish they were born maybe, you know, 50 years ago, something like that. Great stuff. Midnight in Paris. That is highly recommended. Oh, I did catch up and watch True Grit, man. The remake of the great John Wayne Western. Actually, wasn't that great a movie? I always thought that was kind of a hack film, the John Wayne. I'm a John Wayne fan, but, True Grit was not one of my favorites of his. So I found it a little ponderous when the great Coen brothers decided to remake it with Jeff Bridges, Matt Damon, and the like. But I watched it, a couple days ago. And, I was a little underwhelmed, I mean, it was cool and gritty and stylish and that great Coen brother dialogue that you just kind of have to really pay attention to, like in Fargo or, Raising Arizona, or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, that there's always a interesting accent that they seem to build their dialogues upon with each film. One of their lesser seen films, The Hudsucker Proxy, everybody talked in that, you know, 30s or when I was just, hey, what are you doing there? See, you know, that dial, that's how everybody talked. You kind of had to really pay attention. So everybody in this one talked about, you know, a lot of mumbling and he's up there on the hill. I couldn't follow what Jeff Bridges was saying a lot of the time. Therefore, it was hard to follow the story. Man, kind of slow, not a lot of action. I don't know. And then it just kind of ends and the credits roll. I'd say I enjoyed it, though. I'd give it 2.5 out of 5 stars. So take that for whatever it's worth. But I will tell you this. Everyone who listens to this show knows of my huge appreciation of British humor. I always wrote off The American Office as a hack deal, which I still believe it is. And I'm a Steve Carell fan, but I just so over the top, so stupid. So unfunny, and to me, it had its moments early on, okay. But if you really think the Office is a great show, then you have not seen the Ricky Gervais, speaking of the Golden Globes, Ricky Gervais, BBC, the original Office, which was just hysterical and over the top, and just shows once again that the Brits really know how to do it. Peter Sellers, Monty Python, Benny Hill, and the rest of them. Even American actors pretending to be British, like This is Spinal Tap. Stuff like that. I just love the accents, all that kind of thing. So to that end, my good friend Wes Cunningham down there in Waco, the great singer, songwriter, actor, he's always picking up these shows on the BBC and says, oh man, check this out. So he turns me on to this new film called The Trip. It was actually a series, I think, on the BBC, but they've put it into a 2-hour movie. It's about these two, I don't know, 40, late 30s, two actors, friends, who go on a foodie tour of Northern England, the Northern English countryside. and two British guys. I get the impression one of it's Steve and Rob. I don't know much about their careers, but obviously they in real life they're actors and they are known throughout England, I guess, for various things. And you know, they're driving around and they're going to restaurants, kind of like a food show, like diners, you know, drive-ins, diners and dives or something like that. But these two guys are going, they're staying in inns, and there's kind of a storyline. One of them has a girlfriend he's breaking up with. The other guy has a family at home. They're gone for 4 or 5 days. So there's some storylines of all that around that. But the gist of it is these guys eating good food, drinking wine, and talking about acting and talking about impersonations over their fine meals. And there are just some great exchanges with them doing their Anthony Hopkins impressions. And of course, and the big one is Michael Caine. In fact, if you did, if you searched The Trip Michael Caine on YouTube, you would see the scene with the two of them eating a meal. One of them doing his Michael Caine impression, the other guy criticizing it, saying, oh, no, you're doing it all wrong, man. You're doing it. You've got to lean forward. And you've got to get real specific like this, see? You've got to get real specific. And when you get emotional, you've got to break up the voice. You get the broken voice, man. You know, and the other guy nodding his approval. Yes, yes. Just, but you can't do Michael Caine like he was in the 1960s, mate. You can't do it like he did in the 1970s. Because the whiskey and the cigars have all taken effect. And now he talks very low in the Batman movies. Michael Caine talks very low in the Batman movies. And just on and on it goes. I was in stitches over the impressions, the Britishness of the whole thing. Outstanding stuff. So if you have the stomach for that kind of humor, H-U-M-O-U-R, check out The Trip. It's on Netflix sitting right there waiting for you. And you can tell them that your British-obsessed Texas music guy, Phil, turns you on to the show. Check it out, man. Well, speaking of checking things out, Pete Coatney has been with us, man, last couple of weeks, taking time out of his busy life, his life of inspiring people both musically and spiritually, to come here to the podcast, to come here to Trinidad World Recording Studios, to talk about not the year that was, but the year that is yet to be. 2012, looking ahead with our friend Pete Coatney next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you, of course, from Trinidad World Recording Studios, a beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Send me your tracks, musicians and bands, to mix and master. Or make it easy on yourself. Get up here to Fort Worth and cut it all here in the back room, our beautiful studio. I'll produce your record. Call me. 817-733-5256 or email me phil@philpritchett.com. Man, have we ever been lucky to have our old friend Pete Coatney from Jack Ingram's band joining us the last couple of weeks. And man, he joins us yet again here. He could not come back this week without talking. We're just talking about last year, 2011, the year that was, so many things that happened. Kind of looking ahead here. Pete Coatney, he has recently bought a new house. He's put down some roots here in Texas for the foreseeable future. Of course, we'll be playing with Jack and a lot going on in the world of music here coming in 2012. I wanted to know his thoughts moving forward. His thoughts moving forward, music, life, goals for 2012, predictions, etc. I don't know, Pete. Do you have anything that is Ingram making a new record anytime soon? Y'all do anything like that, or is that a ways off?
There is some stuff in the can, and of course, you know, his optimistic approach that he takes would have us having a record out by summer.
Okay,
I can't say for sure. You know,
but mid 2012, maybe a new Jack Ingram album out there.
Yeah, he's hoping that will be the case.
Well, great.
You know, I was going to say, Phil, looking around this joint, it looks like anybody that would want to come here in 2012 and make a record. This seems like a turnkey operation. They could pretty much come in and do the whole thing here, and
Absolutely.
And have your stamp of approval on
top to bottom. I try to make it easy for anybody coming in. Guys are like, man, I want to come. I got these songs. I'm making a record. What do I need to bring? I'm like, you don't need to bring nothing.
Just bring yourself.
Shut up.
Yeah.
What about a band? I go, you don't need a band. We'll get Pete to come play drums.
Yeah,
I'll play bass. I'll play guitar, keys, you know, whatever.
Heck, but, you can even play drums. I've heard you
play drums. Yeah, I can get around a little bit.
Yeah.
My drumming, though, it's kind of like my drawing. Like, as a young child, I was a good drawer.
Yeah.
But I never took any lessons or something, and I'm real frustrated now. I draw pictures for my kids around the house, and it looks like it looks the exact same way I drew in like the fifth grade.
I
just never developed as an artist. And I had some friends who went to like some art school and learned how to really shade and really draw realistic looking human faces. And I never developed. I was like, man, I draw like I did when I was in middle school. I've never gone anywhere. My drumming is the same. I hate to say I've progressed on the guitar because I've played so much of it. I'll sit down at the drums and play, and I lock up on the fills sometimes, and my foot, I don't have the control. I haven't played that much drums. I'm like, I mean, you're pretty good. I'm like, yeah, but I was this good in the eighth grade. I haven't gotten any better. What can I do to get better? 2012, be a better drummer. What could I be doing?
You could set up a drum kit and just start playing.
Just play? Just play to my favorite records, put them on? Is that what you did? How'd you learn how to play?
That's what I did. I just started playing to records. I mean, you know,
Did you put headphones on and just sit there and just...
This is the crazy thing. When I started playing when I was 13, and I cranked the stereo up loud and just played along to it. I didn't even have headphones.
But you just put something on and just... Yeah. Your folks didn't mind you being loud in the room or...
Very gracious and tolerant.
Would you maybe throw a towel over some of the toms or just to kind of mute them a little bit?
No.
Just full volume?
Just full volume.
What kind of kit did you have?
Golly, I started out on a kit. It was a Blue Sparkle kit that was probably made in Japan called Black Gold.
Yeah.
Black Gold drums.
Proud sponsor of Pete Cody.
Real high quality stuff there.
Right.
And then, you know, I moved on to Ludwig and Slingerland and, you know, and now I've got... A collection of...
How many kits do you have, probably? I don't know. Of course, you got a million different individual snares and drums.
I don't know. I probably got 15 or 16.
Yeah, is that right? We've had several here at the studio over the years. In and out. What happened to the Blue Sparkle kit, the other Blue Sparkle kit that toured with you for so long?
Just last night, and this is no joke, last night I shipped that kit off with a buddy of mine who is a drummer, and he hasn't played in years, and he was saying that the kit that he had for so long, he sold years ago. And, you know, we struck up conversation about it. I said, well, have you played in a while? He said, no. I said, well, would you have time or would you like to? Do you have a place where you could set one up? He said, sure. He said, it's just me and a house. And he said, you know, he lives there by himself. And I said, well, I said, I got a kit in here.
Good things follow that drum kit.
Last night, he took that thing home. Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
that's good. It did great stuff for us here. It was when I was officing out of the big room next door in the small studio. I had that kit just set up all the time, man, and would play on it. And it's on some of those early Bullfighter records. That's all that Blue Sparkle kit, you know. Stu would come in and play it, and great sound. Of course, it tours a Rives Your Road kit for how long?
A couple of years.
Yeah. Great. Ingram would stand on top of that bass drum.
It's a wonder it held up.
I know. So what other, 2012, boy, did you see that, speaking of 2012, you got Van Halen getting back together. Did you see that?
I did see.
With David Lee Roth.
Yeah, I saw that. We'll see how that pans out.
I can give you a prediction on that right now. Yeah, are we ready? Are we doing predictions yet?
Well, let's might as well.
You know what? Here's what makes me sad. They were probably my favorite band growing up. I mean, as a little kid, I mean, Van Halen, Roth, the whole thing. How come I don't look at that and feel overjoyed? I look at that and just kind of shake my head. I feel a tinge of sadness, a tinge of depression. Why is that?
I don't know.
Is that on me? I just kind of, I don't go, man, awesome, good for them, or I need to go to the show. I just shake my head and go, oh, gosh.
Yeah,
oh, boy. Why? I don't know. You don't like that. You feel joy. You feel.
I guess I'm. Or do you kind of go? Just a tad past indifferent. I mean,
I mean,
it's like they were never my favorite band.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I were gonna see them, let me back up. I did see them in '85 with Sammy.
Okay.
But if I were gonna see them, the way I really would ever want to see Van Halen. I'd like to see him with Dave, you know. But you know, Diamond Dave has lost some of his luster, I would think, you know.
A little doughier, a little balder.
He's definitely balder.
Sing as well as he did. I mean, he could never sing that great.
Yeah.
Man, have you ever heard that on a 1310 The Ticket here in Dallas? I don't know how they got it, but maybe it's on the internet. It's Roth's
outtakes,
vocal tracks.
How did those get out there? That's on YouTube, I think. I think you can find those on YouTube.
Oh my gosh, dude. It was from that first Van Halen record.
It's hilarious.
It's just David Lee Roth's vocal track.
Yeah.
Just wow. I mean, just him doing all that stuff. Just all by himself in a booth. I mean, it is just a riot, man. Yeah. I mean, it shows up on stuff a lot, and I just get the biggest kick out of it, man. Roth. Man, but you know, the story of that whole deal that's compelling to me with this regard to the Van Halen deal is I was just the biggest. I mean, I got into guitar because of Eddie Van Halen. I mean, he was just the god of gods. I mean, I was in the seventh grade in 1984. I mean, I was, you know, you might have missed the window a little bit more. You were maybe a little more on the more sophisticated music.
Are you trying to say older?
Is that what I said? That's not
well,
what I said.
Well, you know, in 84, I was already 3 years out of high school.
Well, okay. You know, Pete, you'll know, remember those as your post-high school days.
Yeah.
But no, so, man, I just hit the window. 13, my first guitar, what's going on? What do you mean, what's going on, dude? Panama, you know, this is what's going on. So I just so avidly followed him. He was such an influence on everybody and everything, and the way, and just no one played like him, no one looked like him. The whole thing, it was just before or since. And I feel like in the modern era, he has been much by his own fault, but just much maligned. Like they had these top 100 guitarists of all time, and man, I just for a long time there in the 80s, it was just like, man, you had like Jimi Hendrix maybe number one as far as some guy from outer space doing stuff. And man, you know, Clapton and Jeff Beck, yeah, those guys were up there. And man, Eddie Van Halen was way up there. I mean, he was just like, I mean, who could you compare him to? I mean, he was like, I mean, it was kind of blues bass, Jimmy Page kind of rock through the 70s. And all of a sudden, there's this guy doing the Eruption. I mean, that was a mind-blowing, and it just started, for better or worse, a revolution of the type of guitar playing. You know, I mean, it was just otherworldly. And but now I see Rolling Stone come out, and Eddie Van Halen's like number 71 on a list of 100. Yeah, behind number 9, Jack White.
Yeah, they've got some interesting.
Kurt Cobain, number 14. I'm just like, what are you talking about? Come on. It's like people have forgotten. I guess they've become such a joke. And these last couple of tours, Eddie's been drinking and like passing out on stage and just, you know, Dave's in and he's out. It's just this laughing stock kind of deal. So maybe that was the sadness I heard when they're getting back together. I was just kind of like, oh.
You're not the only one that is chagrined by that.
You know,
you're not the only one that's chagrined by that. You know, that list of the top 100 guitarists. I've had this discussion with Frenchie, and he's been vein poppingly upset by some of those.
Frenchie, of course, Jack's longtime guitar player. Who are some of his
Jeff Beck is his favorite.
And
he's just completely mortified by that top 10. You know,
Was Beck kind of down the list a little bit?
I think what really set Frenchie off was he saw that Jack White was ahead of Beck.
Yeah.
And he can't take that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, Frenchie's very opinionated, and he'll let you know exactly what he thinks about something. Which I'm glad.
You know, it's funny. Jack had a Frenchie from France, of course, hence the name. And also another longtime guitar player was Jens Pinkernel from Germany.
Yep.
What's with these European guitar players? It's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, in Europe, American
blues
culture,
country. Yeah.
It's yeah. I mean, it's just big. American culture is huge, and anything Americana, anything that has to do with America, they tap into, you know, rock and roll, blues. Yeah, I mean, go back to the
country,
Stones. They were trying to be
Texas, even by itself, is a cool thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, ZZ Top. Those guys love that stuff.
Yeah. The Stones were trying to be, you know, all the black blues guys from Mississippi, from the Delta. They were trying to sound like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, Frenchie and Jens both were steeped in, you know, traditional rock and blues.
Who does he really like? Jeff Beck's his favorite, but is he also a big... Is he, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff like that?
He appreciates ZZ Stevie Ray Vaughan. I don't know if he would call himself a fan, but he certainly appreciates him. But he's a huge ZZ Top fan.
Right, right.
Totally digs, you know, Billy Gibbons.
Yinz was too, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yinz, I've told the story maybe. Yinz was one of the guys who really taught me about guitar, gear, amps, tone, stuff like that. Opening some of those, some of our early opening shows with Jack and stuff, where me and the band kind of started playing a lot. I just had like an old, I just had like a new Fender amp up there. He's like, what the hell is that you're playing? You know, and I'm like, well, what? He, of course, he had like a 68 twin and a 71 reverb, you know, a super reverb like tied together. Like, that's a lot. Remember that? He had like a you know, those Fender super reverbs.
Yeah, man.
Had four tens in it. And then he also had the 212 Fender twin reverb tied together, just coming out of both. I mean, that was just a hell of a sound.
Yeah, he was loud.
Real loud. And he had his Strat.
Great tone. Great
played,
tone.
Played like 13s, like real heavy strings. And just the bass all the way on 10 on both amps, just at low end. And then he'd had a little, he'd have the treble kind of dialed. He just had a way he set the amp, you know. I was like, man, this is how you got to set it to get that tone. You know, I was like, oh, and I learned from looking at him. He was showing me like, man, you can't, you got to have it like this. How are you going to play a solo without this? You know, and, you know, he kind of taught me about it. So it's kind of ironic, an American Texas guitar player learning from a German who learned from the Texas guys.
Yeah.
Had to go through Europe to figure out my guitar tone in some ways. Well, what else, man? What else is going on in 2012? What about this whole world-ending stuff? You know, even following this deal? The Mayan calendar?
You know, I can't say that I am because I'm not too concerned about it.
Not too concerned, huh?
No, you know, I'm one of those guys that I feel like I've done what I feel like I need to do to get ready for the ending.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not in my hands.
It's not in your hand. It's not your call, is it?
It's not my call. And the one who does make that call has called me into himself. So
that's right. So come what may.
That's right.
That's right, man. What is the story on that? I act like I don't really know. I really don't. But it's 2012. Is it December 21st, 2012? Is that the last day on the Mayan calendar?
I don't know.
What it is?
I don't
like
know,
that.
But if it is, we need to move Christmas up a little bit
it's
so we can 12, get our gifts.
No, it's 12. Yeah, it's 12/21. Yeah, we might have to release that Christmas album earlier. Release it in like October, maybe.
Yeah,
just in case.
But we just need to move it up so we can get all of our goodies.
That's right. Yeah, right.
But you know, who knows what's that all about? I mean, you'll need to get a more knowledgeable guest for.
Well,
for
you
that.
Know, I'm looking forward to 2012 predictions.
Let's
the world end? That's something, and you're saying no.
Well, now you see,
the only thing that's going to end in 2012 for me is the Van Halen tour. About halfway through.
Yeah,
Eddie goes into rehab, Roth quits, and just that's it after about four dates. It's going to look like a Guns N' Roses tour.
Well, oh boy. That's supposed to happen in 2012 as well, you know.
You know, with Guns N' Roses, you just have to you have to wait maybe a little bit longer. We're getting close, though. We're getting close to the point where Axl Rose, where certain financial ruin will finally set in. And they'll have to hit the road.
Oh, I mean, it's scheduled. It's
supposed already
to
it's already the original lineup.
No, not the original lineup.
Well, he's out there all the time playing casinos and a Guns N' Roses, aren't they? They've been out there touring Brazil or something, haven't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I know they've done a few dates, but I think it's been pretty select. But supposedly they're doing a world tour in 2012.
Yeah, man, they're a hard one for me to because I was in. Another prime-ish in college, high school and college, when that record came out.
Yeah.
And that was enlightening and fun and just real rock and roll. You didn't think there were bands like that anymore. It was all Madonna and Paula Abdul. Then all of a sudden, here's Guns N' Roses. You're like, man, this stuff is great. And the record was great. And, man, I went and saw them three times. And I got to say, from that first record on, I was always so disappointed and just shocked by everything they did. Their shows, you know, the canceling dates and walking off the stage and guys quitting the band. And the double album thing was kind of a mess. And they did a cover record that wasn't that good. And their only singles were Live and Let Die and Knock It on Heaven, like kind of cover song. They never did anything. They did about one. They did one record, but they're kind of – people still – put them in this pantheon. It's like there's like AC/DC and you know Guns N' Roses, and to be fair, I probably would say that Appetite for Destruction probably belongs with Back in Black.
That's a great record.
Some of these classic hard rock records, I'm like, man, it certainly belongs in the on that level. I would say that. But as a group, man, they didn't leave a whole lot behind besides that one album.
So,
in my opinion,
you're not into the Use Your Illusion one.
No, it was damn it, all the videos with him in the high tops and the spandex, swimming with the dolphins, and what was all that? It was just ponderous.
Well, you know,
those videos were just stupid. Every other song on that. Remember, there was all these songs that was like, "Hey man, F you," you know, it was just like some drum beat. Matt Sorum, the band killer, was then the drummer, you know, and they just didn't have anything. I mean, I know it sold, the record sold, and there were some good moments on there, some decent songs, but it was a pretty lackluster run, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, well, you know, that was fueled a lot by what was happening that wasn't musical, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, lifestyle.
Yeah. You're talking about the abject drug use.
Oh. I mean, if you read Slash's autobiography.
Have you read it?
No, I was talking
about that's a page turner.
Frenchie read it when we were on the road one time, and he was telling me that it was unbelievable
what they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, just shooting heroin on the plane
total insanity.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame. I feel like they maybe had more to, if they could have just put something together. They showed a lot of promise, that first album, right? It was just like, wow. Maybe it was just so big and so good, they just could never live up to it. And I feel like Rose, he just could never sing like that on the at shows. His voice would fail him, and someone would throw up backstage. And just it was just a mess. I feel like the albums and the tours were just a disaster. They really were. I mean, there was just never... I saw them at Texas Stadium here. Did you go to that gig?
With NXS? I never saw them.
I mean, they came out for about 8 minutes and were stormed off the stage. Just no one knew what was going on. And there was all this famous, the riot in St. Louis years later. It was just kind of like, they just can't do it. I mean, they've made this record and they can't live up to it. They can't follow it up with a record. They can't play a show. And they knew it. They got lucky. They caught lightning in a bottle. And that was the end of them, really.
It was difficult for them to keep it together because of you know, all of the abusive lifestyle. Because, I mean, look at the lineup changes that happened relatively quickly. Into Izzy Stradlin.
Who, in retrospect, was probably the heart and soul of the band. He wrote all those kinds of tunes. I think he was kind of maybe the songwriter. When he left, it was kind of like, all right, we got a vocalist and a soloing guitar player. And he just didn't have any... songs.
Yeah, and Steven Adler, you know, he had to leave because that poor guy.
Yeah.
It's like he's still suffering.
He had like a cocaine-induced stroke or something terrible. You know, I recently read that Duff McKagan, bass player, has now started his own financial consulting firm.
He went
back to school and got his degree in economics and something, and there's a website. I wish I could remember the name of the company. My friend Chip's going to kill me for forgetting. But something like Westinghouse Financial or something. And he says that the musicians are the market for musicians, people with money in that market is underserved.
Yeah.
And that he will help them invest their money. And that he's got a whole new deal. And he was an investor in Starbucks early on.
Hmm.
McKagan. He was a Seattle guy.
Wow.
And so he's kind of had he's one that's kind of cleaned up and maybe was a little, maybe had a little more going for him maybe than some of the other guys.
Yeah.
The other guys had a rough go. Oof,
wow.
Jeez. Well, but I didn't know they were supposed to get back together. Of course, everybody's always getting back together.
So predictions for 2012. We could start in January and see what you're thinking about the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Well, I can predict this.
The Cowboys won't be there.
No. In fact, this segment will run long after the Cowboys have been knocked out. I think the Giants will just crush us in the last game of the season. I hope fans are listening to this right now going, Phil was wrong. The Cowboys won and went on to the Super Bowl.
Well.
I don't know. I just, they're just going down. You know, I mean, how could you not like Green Bay? I mean, if they're, you got to like them.
I was talking to somebody the other day. I said,
yeah, who do you like?
I said the actual Super Bowl, or the game that will be more interesting than the Super Bowl, would be the NFC championship game with Green Bay and New Orleans.
That'd be a good matchup.
That will be the game that's more interesting probably than the Super Bowl.
Man, I don't count out for some reason, man. I've always had faith in the Giants. They're just not pretty. Every year they're like, they're not going to do anything. And just, man, they're always in December, sacking the quarterback, running the ball. Eli's playing pretty good. And they always seem to just put it together right about the time the Cowboys just, you know, always preseason Cowboys. Oh, 12-4, this is the year. And they always just fall off a cliff at the end of it.
Yeah, December's notoriously bad for the Cowboys. You know,
I would say the hard thing's from the AFC. Who do you like over there? That's kind of hard to figure. You got Baltimore, and you got Pittsburgh, and you got New England.
It's going to be one of those three, probably. It's always seems to be, you know.
You don't see many surprises coming from the AFC. What about like San Francisco? You think they're an outlier? They're not going to penetrate?
No, I think they could be. I think they could do surprisingly well.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. I think they could trip somebody up.
Yeah. Man, I think my dark horse is going to be the New York Giants.
Yeah, see, I'm not too confident with those guys. I think that whoever wins that Dallas-New York game is going to be one and done.
Yeah, you think so? Well, maybe so.
And in some ways, if Dallas loses, it'll be merciful because it's just going to be another frustrating.
Did y'all play any Super Bowl stuff last year, you and Jack?
We did. We did a Super Bowl, a big Super Bowl shindig on Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, early. Where was it?
It was over in Dallas. It was
in the freezing cold.
It was quite chilly because that was the week that it snowed and got all
it was like 8 degrees. We were supposed to play in Sundance Square on the Ado stage that week. And they were like, man, no matter how cold it gets, these are Packers and Steelers fans, man. They're not going to care. They're going to be out partying. I'm like, dude, we'll be there. We'll be there. No problem. I mean, they called me that the day of that show at like noon. I mean, it was like 8 degrees. They just went, man, no way. It was an outdoor gig. So it was just like, for a while, it was just, we got heaters. We got this. Don't worry about it. And it was just finally just, dude, that's no good. I kind of stuck because we had that gig booked for a while, and it was going to be a good, you know, it's just too bad it didn't come off. But y'all had an indoor venue that day?
No, well, it was a tent.
A tent? Yeah. Like in a parking lot or something?
Yeah, and they called it the Bud Light Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually called A Loft is the hotel. It's a kind of a boutique hotel in downtown Dallas. Right. But, you know, I took it that, once again, we were showing non-Texans are Texas hospitality. It was Pittsburgh and Wisconsin people, and we just wanted to make them feel at home. Mm-hmm. So we rolled out some weather that would make them feel at home.
That's right, man. Just welcome, you know, make them feel comfortable.
Made it as cold as we could.
That's right. You know, up there in like Green Bay, my dad worked up there for early on in his work and life, and the stories he tells about just the snow and the
bitter cold.
It's just staggering, man. Yeah. He's just like, man, you can't believe it, man. The wind, how deep the snow gets. He just goes, it's just a whole different way of life, you know. And some of those cities like Minneapolis and Milwaukee have just, their whole downtowns are built where you just don't have to go outside at all.
That's right.
You drive in and park in a heated underground parking garage, go up, elevator to your office, then there's those catwalks between buildings. And,
right.
And some, you just don't have to go outside,
That's right.
And that's the only way it can kind of function, you know. It's we played several times in Chicago. I know y'all have too. And boy, it can get cold up there. Good grief! We were up there in December, mid December, played up at Joe's.
Oh yeah, great place.
Venue. But man, you just can't believe the pile in the parking lot. The snow piled up, you know, where they've just pushed it. I'm just like, man. So I just sit there and I think, oh, yeah, it'll be here in like May. And I was like, golly. I mean, you can't, it's just hard to believe. Hard to believe that kind of cold, man.
I love giving Joe's a shout out. Those folks are good people. Good people.
The great Ed up there, Ed Warm. Well, man, 2012 is upon us. We hope it's not the last year on this great, beautiful green earth of ours. We hope the Mayans are wrong. Will they lose some credibility? I mean, people go down there and visit the ruins and all that, but if their calendar's wrong, what happens to the Mayans? Do we only shrug our shoulders? Just tear it down. Put a Walmart down there. Let's use it for something useful. No?
No, you just kind of, you know.
You just forgive them and say, well, like, how could they?
That's right.
You think so?
Yeah. I think you just go on and hopefully enjoy the fact that 2012 was a good year.
A good year of health and prosperity.
Let's hope that the Rangers, somehow
figure it out.
Make it 3 in a row, at least to the World Series.
I'm nervous about this Japanese pitcher, man.
Yu Darvish.
Oh, Yu Darvish.
Great name.
We had Dice K, we had Nomo, we had Chan Ho Park, we've had all. They come on, they have a good year early, and then none of them have just pitched good for 5 years. They flame out pretty quick, guys. Evident. They say this guy's different. Oh, he's big. I'm just kind of like, and we got those guys. We bring it. They come over all the time. Everyone's like, oh, but this guy's just even better than all that. I'm just kind of like, I just feel like our hitters over here are just. Those guys are harder to get out, you know. Be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
They got to sign him first, I guess. Yu Darvish, the end of the world, the Van Halen tour, the Guns N' Roses tour. Well, that's something what you're looking for.
A Jack Ingram record.
Jack Ingram album in 2012. That's a look ahead with Pete Cotney, the great drummer from Jack Ingram's Beat Up Ford Band. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for you here today. My thanks to Pete Cotney, who has been with us the last 3 weeks. Sharing his views on life and all things music, of course. What a treat to have him back after about a year and a half since he first debuted on the podcast. Well, click that donate button at p2podcast.com. If you feel the spirit move you, folks, this program you enjoy, we enjoy bringing it to you. It is completely fan-supported, commercial-free. If you send a dollar or $10,000, it is appreciated. Thanks to all of you who've already done that. I hope you got my thank you email that I sent back to you. Much appreciated. Thank you all out there. We'll see you the same time next week, folks, here on the P2 Podcast. Much tougher. This is my world, and I am world leader. Pretend this is my life. This is my time.